are listening to WXRW LP Milwaukee 104.1 FM, RiverWestRadio.com globally, CreamCityMedia.com/anti. Hello again, I'm your host, NTSC, and welcome to the Anti, a weekly primer on freedom. The Anti is anti-authoritarian, anti-capitalist, anti-hierarchy, anti-sexist, anti-racist, anti-fascist, anti-electoralist, and more. If we're against so much, what do we stand for? Well, the ideals of freedom. In this series, we try to explore what a free society might look like while recognizing that none of us today are free. As always, WXRW River West Radio needs help. Times are tough for nonprofits, and especially so for nonprofits who seek to engage, educate, and activate the at-risk and the disenfranchised. If you would like to help us out, donate today online, join our Patreon campaign, come on down to the station at 824 East Center Street, Milwaukee, Wisconsin, and purchase some gear. Or if you represent a local entity of some kind, reach out and become an official underwriter. You can support us, and in so doing, we will make sure everybody knows about you. Last week, we talked about radicalizing you, or at least beginning the process. Yes, you, personally. And if you're not already thinking outside of the structure of capitalism and neoliberalism, you're not really thinking realistically when it comes to solving the very real problems that endanger our world today. And I know that that sounds really harsh, but it's the absolute truth. And I'm hoping to make the case over the next few episodes. So last week we started the conversation by reading David Graeber's essay, Are You an Anarchist? The answer may surprise you. The essay is available online for anyone to read if you have an interest, or if you like my weird speaking voice. Last week's episode is available at creamcitymedia.com/anti. So we've talked a lot about anarchism over this short because it is a readily available process with a very rich tradition that you can start using today to begin creating a safer, more equitable world, at least where you have direct influence. And if you read or you listen to the essay, then you already know that you are probably acting in a lot of ways using basic anarchist principles or in keeping with very basic anarchist principles, which are all very natural human inclinations. So despite my focusing on anarchism a lot in this show, there are many ways that we could achieve a safer, more regenerative, more equitable and free society. And those methods go by a lot of different names. If you have some sort of weird aversion to the term anarchism, you know, probably because of its historical misuse and miseducation surrounding it. So there are a lot of different methods. But the fact of the matter is, you know, they share a great many processes in common with anarchism as an ongoing organic process. Some examples, industrial democracy, as practiced and taught by the industrial workers of the world, is one method by which we could all create a new, better world in the shell of the old, to use the wobbly terminology. A resource-based economy is another system that's been in development by a large community of futurists and scientists and engineers since the late 1960s. If you don't know anything about a resource-based economy, it seeks to liberate humanity from slavery while simultaneously creating a systems-based approach to the management of our planetary resources in accordance with regenerative, sustainable practices and permaculture. If you're unsure exactly how humanity might face and solve the really giant problems which threaten literally all life on Earth, I highly recommend looking into both of these concepts, industrial democracy and a resource-based economy. The Environmental Caucus of the IWW has really great resources. The Venus Project has great resources, as does the Zeitgeist Movement. Whenever I propose that anyone you know, I love and respect, look into anarchism or anarcho-syndicalism or anarcho-communism or industrial democracy or a resource-based economy, I can't help but feel like the listener will think I'm some kind of a conspiracy nut, because all of those, both conceptually and in practice, are radical departures from the world as it exists today, you know, the status quo. And anything that is so obviously and fundamentally different from the current state of affairs appears on the outset as a very scary proposition if we're talking about moving towards any of them as viable solutions to our shared problems. And it's understandable that people want to use the familiar, comfortable tools and systems that we already have to solve our problems. But the fact of the matter is, it is those tools and systems that are creating the problems we face to begin with. And they cannot and they will not be used to solve the problems they are creating. I won't even hazard a terrible metaphor here like I normally would. It's just the truth. The systems we use are creating the problems we face. So today's episode, in the pursuit of further radicalizing you, is all about some of the inherent contradictions embedded in the current system, which cause it to naturally generate the problems facing us today. I say the current system. I know a certain percentage of the people in my life, a percentage that probably grows daily, tune me out the second I use the term capitalism. You know, and I can see it happen too. Their eyes just kind of glaze over and they lose interest in anything I have to say. And, you know, maybe it's my fault because I harp on capitalism so much that, you know, these people have just learned to drown me out mentally when I say the word. I wish I could use a different term, you guys. I really do. But like it or not, you live under capitalism. We all do. This was posted on my wall recently, and it's a great one. To quote the late, great Ursula K. Le Guin, my favorite author of all time, "We live in capitalism. Its power seems inescapable, but then so did the divine right of kings. Any human power can be resisted and changed by human beings." So, I won't apologize for calling out capitalism as one of the primary causes of the world's woes. Today's episode is a small smattering, kind of a sampler platter, if you will, of some contradictions inherent in capitalism. And I know if I'm reaching anyone, I'm probably preaching to the choir. And the odds of any of you actually being radicalized or affected in any way by this material is extremely slim. But it's 2019, and the world is being killed, so I at least have to try. I feel like I need to say this because of the typical format of this show. You know, a weird white guy talking weirdly into a mic for 29 minutes. You'd be forgiven for thinking that any of the content and material that I present on a weekly basis is actually of my own invention or my personal opinions. You'd be wrong. This show, and its basis, in its most basic form, is really nothing more than a mouthpiece for the research, the science, the anthropology, sociology, and the dangerous world-changing activism done by a collection of history's greatest minds. When I say dangerous, I mean dangerous to the, you know, people actually taking part in the activism. People like Emma Goldman, Pyotr Kropotkin, Louise Michel, Lucy Parsons, Karl Marx, Roxanne Meadows, Richard Wolff, Johann Galtung, and the list goes on and on and on and on. And it might not sound like it because I mumble and I stutter terribly, but the production of this show is nothing but research. And I derive all presented materials from reviewed, verified sources. So having tried to defend the veracity or the value of the arguments that I present, let's dive into a few contradictions of the capitalist mode, shall we? Contradiction number one, infinite growth on a finite planet. To quote Tim Jackson, a professor at the University of Surrey, growth and capitalism go together. Growth is functional for capitalism. It's a necessary condition for a capitalist economy. And for this reason, the idea of doing without growth is seen as tantamount to doing away with capitalism. Growth. You hear that term a lot. What is growth in terms of a capitalist mode of production? Well, it means a lot of different things. Economic growth is any increase in the amount of goods and services produced within a specific time frame. Economic growth is also the increase of the production of wealth, you know, the creation of profit. If, for example, a company creates the same amount of goods from one year to the next, which it can't, by the way, it needs to try and grow. But anyway, let's say if, you know, in some theoretical world, they just created the same amount. But if they charged more for the same amount of goods, or they created that same amount of goods by employing fewer workers, then that company has still experienced economic growth. Growth. Or what's sometimes referred to as positive growth, as opposed to negative growth, which is the dumbest term ever, is essential to a capitalist economy. Why? Well, it's called the growth imperative. Economists all agree that if a capitalist entity were to attempt to function under a no-growth policy, then that entity's prospects are what are referred to as highly unattractive in finite time. And bankruptcy becomes a practical certainty in the long run. So what's the problem with the growth imperative? What's the problem with capitalism's requirement for infinite growth? Well, in an attempt to listen to less of me rambling on, we're going to listen first to Professor David Harvey, and then we'll listen to author Michael Ruppert.
But capital can, I think, find some places to go. But the problem with the places it goes to, it doesn't actually feed people. It doesn't actually help people, which is why there's a link between what capital might do to deal with this compounding growth and the necessity to kind of find capacities for infinite expansion, and then people's real needs for, you know, healthcare and for housing and for, you know, a decent life and a decent living environment. So there's a connection, I think, between what capital might do to satisfy this infinite growth requirement and the universal alienation of the mass of the population who say that has nothing whatsoever to do with improving my daily life. I want decent water and I want decent this and that, and capital's not providing that. All it's doing is, you know, feeding these asset bubbles, inventing money so the billionaires can become trillionaires.
The human economic paradigm that has been in place basically for all of recorded history since money was first invented, or certainly since money was first lent at interest, is that we live in an infinite growth paradigm. The economic paradigm we live in now is a Ponzi scheme. It's nothing grows forever. It's not possible. As a great psychologist James Hillman wrote, the only thing that grows in a human body after a certain age is cancer. And I think that that's clearly what we're seeing now at the end of human industrial civilization, with a population approaching 7 billion. Money is only a symbol. It only represents the ability to do work. And energy is the ability to do work. And by printing money, you don't create more energy. Everything in an infinite growth paradigm has to keep growing. It's not just the amount of money that has to keep growing. It's the amount of consumers that have to keep growing as well. Now, the only thing that's made that possible in human civilization is oil. If you look at the presence of oil, or when it was first introduced in the early 1900s, late 1890s, human population shot from roughly 2.5 billion to almost 7 billion people. That's all as a result of oil. So the monetary paradigm requires that you keep generating more consumers to borrow money at interest to generate more money, and obviously that's not possible on a finite planet. I was interviewed by the Wall Street Journal shortly after the movie Collapse came out, And they asked me what the point of the point of the movie was. And I said it very simply. I said, it is not possible to continue infinite consumption and infinite population growth on a finite planet.
That this system is required to grow forever within the limited framework of what we can actually physically produce and consume is really nothing short of insanity. And yet that is the accepted and defended framework of capitalism. And having listened to Michael Ruppert there second, I want to add quickly that we've talked about it before, that the Earth does indeed have a limited carrying capacity, you know, for a human population. But that number far exceeds 8 billion or 9 billion or even 10 billion people and more. If we were to actually use our available land and resources intelligently, instead of wasting the vast majority of it on, you know, harmful and certainly pointless infrastructure like the millions of miles of highways and the millions of miles of office parks and commercial and industrial enterprise. And we talked about all that in an earlier episode. But, you know, overpopulation is by and large a myth. The carrying capacity of the Earth could exceed what we have today and more very comfortably and equitably and safely, while still maintaining and regenerating our environment and habitat for wilderness, you know, and for natural spaces. If we were just to actually manage our shared heritage, our shared natural resources equitably and in a way that made any sense at all versus the ridiculous system that we're forced to operate under today. So that's contradiction number one. You cannot have infinite growth on a finite planet. Contradiction number two, the profit motive or the profit incentive. And we're going to let Professor Richard Wolff start this one off right away.
Every capitalist, I think most of the folks watching know this just from their personal life, every capitalist is always trying to either make more money or survive competitively by saving on his labor costs. One capitalist does it by substituting machines for working people, automating, getting a computer to do what he used to have 50 people do, etc., etc. Another capitalist does it by trying to get cheaper workers in place of more expensive ones, hiring women, if they're less expensive, to do the job that they used to pay men more for, hiring immigrants rather than native folks, moving to another part of the world where wages are much lower. We all know that. So capitalists are always trying to save on labor costs because they can make a better profit if they do that. But here comes the contradiction. If all capitalists are reducing the number of workers they pay or reducing the pay they give to their workers, what will result is that the working people have less and less money. And if they have less and less money, they can't buy what the capitalists are producing to sell. The capitalists, therefore, are destroying themselves, but they have no choice. They have to save on the labor outlay, and then that comes back and bites them in the rear end because there's no demand. If you've been so successful becoming rich as a capitalist, you've killed yourself. These kinds of contradictions for Marx are the beginning of the end of a system. It papers it over. For example, when people couldn't buy in the 1970s, the capitalist system kept going anyway. How did it do that? How did it keep going when the people didn't have enough money from their wages to buy? The solution was credit. We loaded the world up. House credit, that's your mortgage. Car payment credit, nobody buys a car except by paying out. Credit cards, which didn't exist before the 1970s for anything but traveling businessmen and only a small number of them. And then when that was not enough, we loaded up for the first time in American history an entire generation of students who can't get a degree without loading up with tens of thousands of dollars of debt. We kept the system going. People could buy stuff even though their wages didn't pay for it by borrowing. And in 2008, the predictable happened. It turned out your fix only lasts for a while. You really have to ask, in a way that many of us as Marxists haven't done for most of our lives, the problems of capitalism now are so severe so systemic, so global, that we're beginning to wonder whether this system is going to find a way out. The Marxists are not the only ones wondering whether this system is coming to an end. The people on the other side of the political fence are very worried, too.
The profit incentive literally creates a paradigm in which the capitalist, in pursuing his own interest in the profits of his company, shoots himself in the face because he makes it more and more difficult, and again, quite naturally in his mind, for consumers to actually spend money on the good or service that his company is providing. An article by Adele Peters, published in 2017, outlined the invention of a brand new robot capable of sewing t-shirts, jeans, and other clothing without any human input whatsoever. For generations, the garment industry appeared safe and secure from the so-called threat of automation. This robot, which, by the way, was fiendishly designed by scientifically and systematically studying and copying the hand and eye movements of garment factory workers, this robot now threatens the livelihoods of around 161 million people worldwide, according to global apparel industry statistics. And mind you, fully three-fourths of garment workers worldwide are women. So you may think that so-called third world countries are going to be impacted most heavily by this automation. And to an extent, you'd be kind of right, because third world countries right now are where developing nations are where most garment workers are. But it might surprise you to know that the company behind this particular garment sewing robot, I'm going to mispronounce this, Tianyuan Garments, which is a Chinese company, opened their first factory, which is debuting this new robot, in Arkansas, where environmental and labor regulations are now more attractive than those in mainland China to big business. Each robot, of which this particular factory has 21, will produce 1.2 million t-shirts every year. And this leads quite nicely into the third contradiction of capitalism: artificial scarcity. Artificial scarcity is the scarcity of items, even though either the technology and production or sharing capacity exists to create a theoretical limitless abundance of that item. So scholars and scientists and technologists, going all the way back to anarchists like Pyotr Kropotkin in the late 1800s, to our own modern day Buckminster Fuller, have noted that the productive capacity already exists on planet Earth to create a theoretically limitless abundance of all necessary things. Clean water, arable land, safe, clean air, education, housing, nutritious food. And the only reason that we don't already enjoy access to an abundance of all these things is a matter of capitalism, right? Okay, so we have a robot which can now sew over 3,000 shirts a day. A third of all food produced across the entire globe is thrown away annually. Let that settle in, right? A full third of all food is thrown away to rot every single year, while 36 million people are starving to death, or do starve to death. They die of starvation every year. 36 million, 6 million of whom are children under the age of 12. This is statistics that I quote endlessly. In the United States, empty homes outnumber the homeless fully 6-1. It is just simple economics. The more scarce a good or service can be made, the more desperate people will become in order to obtain that good or service, which means the purveyor of it has leverage, and the price of that good or service can therefore be increased, Once your own supply of a particular good or service is insured, profit can be increased by restricting supply of it to everyone else. So we are technologically capable of creating abundance for all people, but it is not in the financial interest of the capitalist to make that abundance available, even while it is in his interest to create more and more products every year. To improve the methodology of production ceaselessly. So that's what we have time for this week. A quick primer on three huge contradictions inherent to the capitalist system that we are all witnessing play out in real time on a global scale, to the detriment of our environment and habitat, the extinction of thousands of species every year, the destabilization of the climate, systematic enslavement and impoverishment of the whole of the world's human population, and all for the benefit, comfort, and luxury of a super tiny, super rich minority. So are you radicalized yet? No? Yes? You sick of this system? You ready to start organizing towards change? Yes? No? Rest assured, there are more contradictions inherent to the capitalist mode of production, such as the creation of the global proletariat, the dangers of democracy, the abuse of science, the contradiction of labor value versus ownership, etc., etc., etc. And we'll go into those later if we have to in further episodes. In the meantime, thank you for tuning into The Anti here on WXRW River West Radio. I've been your host, NTSC, and I'll be back again next week to discuss further topics as they relate to freedom and our awesome shared potential. Past episodes can always be found at creamcitymedia.com/anti, and more information about the show can be found at riverwestradio.com. So, for next week, I'll just remind you that if you are interested in changing the world towards the better, if you would like a freer society, a more equitable society, a safer society that actually aims to regenerate our shared environment and our shared natural resources while liberating all of humanity, look into industrial democracy. If you don't like anarchism as a term, look into a resource-based economy. If you don't like anarchism as a term, but don't forget, if you've ever been living your life in a way that respects the autonomy of other people, if you've ever lived your life in a way that is cooperative with other people without imposing an unnatural hierarchy or imposing your thoughts and beliefs on somebody through violence, you know, if you've ever lived your life against the system of mob rule, then you've already been living your life according to some anarchist tendencies. And I would invite you again to read the essay by David Graeber. Are you an anarchist? The answer may surprise you. We'll talk more about this stuff next week. Be safe, everybody.